Matthew 27 and starting at verse 45. The section's headed The Death of Jesus. From the sixth hour until the ninth hour, darkness came over all the land. About the ninth hour, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of those standing there heard this, they said, "He's calling Elijah." Immediately one of them ran and got a sponge. He filled it with wine vinegar, put it on a stick and offered it to Jesus to drink. The rest said, "Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him." And when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit. At that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook and the rocks split. The tombs broke open and the bodies of many holy people who had died were raised to life. They came out of the tombs, and after Jesus' resurrection they went into the holy city and appeared to many people. When the centurion and those who were with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and all that had happened, they were terrified and exclaimed, "Surely he was the Son of God."
Thank you, Andrew. If you keep that open, you might find that helpful. So, it's a bit of a mystery, isn't it? There's some strange things that happen as Jesus is dying on the cross. Now, the first strange thing is I've lost my jigsaw puzzle. I brought a jigsaw puzzle with me today, and I seem to have lost all the bits of it. If you can see a piece of my jigsaw puzzle near you, can you just grab hold of it and keep hold of it just now? You don't have to be a child to do this, but if you're a child, you can. But there should be quite a few pieces. I think there are 5 pieces altogether. Yeah, so if you can see a piece, do grab it. Keep hold of it just now. So we're going to see if we can put the pieces together and make sense of Jesus' death. Now, if you notice in our reading, it started by saying, darkness came over all the land. And Matthew uses an old way that they used in those days to talk about what time it was. And he says, about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out in a loud voice. From the sixth hour until the ninth hour, darkness came over the land. Now, hope you've got your math brains with you today, because you need to work something out here, okay? If you start counting from 6 a.m, okay, so that's 0. 7 a.m. is hour 1. Okay, who can tell me what the 6th and the 9th hour are? I know school's finished, but you shouldn't have put your brains away quite yet. Jacob? Yes, well done. 12 o'clock, lunchtime, and 3 o'clock. Excellent. Who's got the jigsaw piece that says darkness, daytime darkness? Anyone got that bit? Yeah, do you want to bring that over here, Daniel? We'll stick that up, because that's the first part of our mystery. Let's put the blue tack on the other side. That's it. Daytime darkness. There we go. Thank you. So we've got darkness in the middle of the day. Now that's quite unusual, isn't it? Especially in the country where Jesus was. Because if you're in a hot country, what do they tell you to do between 12 and 3? What are you meant to do? Yeah, go for a siesta. Why? Why, Martin? Why do you go for a siesta? It's too hot, isn't it? Brilliant. The sun is at its highest and you need to go for a siesta because it's too hot. But Matthew tells us there was darkness during that time on the day that Jesus died. That's very unusual, isn't it? Now, all good detectives, if you watch detective shows, have a notebook, don't they? And we have a little notebook over here. So I think we should check in our notebook and see if it says anything about darkness. Do you think that's a good idea? Let's see what it says about darkness during the day, because it's very unusual, isn't it? Oh, here we go, first page. Excellent. Someone's left us a note. It says, daytime darkness, Exodus chapter 10. Ooh, now who remembers? We've just finished doing Exodus, haven't we? Who can remember what the darkness was in the story of Exodus? Huh? And why did God send a plague of darkness? Okay, because they believed in the sun god and he was showing he was the greater god. If you read Exodus chapter 10 and verse 20 and 21, in verse 20 it might give you a clue as to why God sent them a plague of darkness. Chapter 10 and verse 20 and 21. What happens just before the plague of darkness? Yeah, Pharaoh was not doing what God asked him, was he? And actually the Bible tells us that darkness is a sign that God is angry at people who don't do what he asks. God is angry. That's why we have darkness during the day. So it's a sign of God's judgment. Someone is in big trouble with God. But who is it? Now, if you're in trouble with God, that might make you shout out, mightn't it? What happens next? About the ninth hour, Jesus cried out in a loud voice. And Matthew gives us it in Aramaic, but then he tells us what it means. So it doesn't matter if we don't know those words. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you left me alone? Well done, Enoch. You've got that one. Well noticed. Thank you very much. Put that one up next. Well done. Good spot there. So Jesus cries out. Does it fit? Oh, yes, it does. There we go. Jesus cries out, why have you left me alone? Now, those of you with young children, Timothy, will know what it's like when a baby gets left on its own for the first time. Not sleeping with mum and dad, what happens? Lots of crying, isn't there? Or if you've ever had a new puppy and you've left it downstairs on the first night, what happens? Yeah, lots of crying. It's a howl though, isn't it? Someone is all on their own. Jesus has been left on his own, separated from his Father God, which has never happened before. It's like God has unfriended Jesus. For those of you who are into social networks and all that, he's been unfriended, he's been cut off, he's been separated from God. This is Jesus who talked to his Father every day. But now God has turned his back on Jesus. Well, what's that all about? Do you think we should check the notebook? Let's have another look at the notebook and see if it's got anything here that can help us. Oh, it says, left all alone, look at Psalm 22. Psalm 22, verse 1. That's interesting. What does that say? Thank you, Martin. So Psalm 22 and verse 1. Has anyone got that? Yes. My God, why have you forsaken me? The exact words that Jesus used. And if we'd read all of Psalm 22, we would have realised it was a psalm written by a righteous man who cries out to God because he feels abandoned. And Jesus is a righteous man, isn't he? Righteous just means doing right, never having done anything wrong. Oh, this is very mysterious, isn't it? God is angry with Jesus, so angry that he's left him, separated from him, left him all alone, and yet Jesus has done nothing wrong. And yet, did you notice, Jesus still cries out, my God, my God. He hasn't fallen out with his Father, but his Father has turned his back on him. Curiouser and curiouser. And then we find there were some people who were a bit confused about who needed rescuing Has anyone got that piece of the puzzle for me? Let's put that one up. Brilliant, thank you very much. Oh, you've even taken the blue tack off for me. Excellent job. There we go. We've got some people standing at the bottom of the cross, and they're very confused, aren't they? What do they say? They're standing there at the bottom of the cross. They're making fun of Jesus. They just think he's a joke. And then they think, oh, Jesus needs rescuing, don't they? They think it's Jesus who needs rescuing. And who do they think might come to Jesus' rescue? Elijah, yeah. That was something that some people believed. They thought if you cried out, Elijah would come and help you. But Elijah was a prophet who died hundreds of years ago. That's all a bit strange, isn't it? They think it's Jesus who needs rescuing. And they think Elijah might come and rescue. But then we've got one more piece of the puzzle here. Have a look what happens next. In verse 50, Jesus cries out again in a loud voice. That's strange, isn't it? Here's a man who's dying, and yet he still has strength. He's not dead yet. He cries out in a loud voice. He's at the point of death, but death has not conquered him. But what does Jesus say? Who's got this bit of the puzzle for me? What does Jesus do? It says he gives up his life. Jesus gives up his life. It's not taken from him. Death doesn't overcome him. Jesus gives up his life. That's strange, isn't it? There he is, supposed to be being killed by the Romans, but he himself decides to give up his life. I think the notebook might help here. Let's have a quick look at our notebook, see if it says anything about that. Oh, Matthew chapter 20 and verse 28. That's what the notebook says. Have a look at Matthew chapter 20 and verse 28. And what does Jesus say in this verse about giving up his life? Jesus says, and it's got it here in red pen. That must be the important word. Jesus gave his life as a ransom for many. Now, if someone gets kidnapped, if I kidnap, just for one moment, can I just kidnap you? If I kidnapped Enoch's hedgehog and then said, I know, evil, isn't it? And I said, I'll give you him back, but you have to pay me £5. That is called the ransom money. If you give me £5, I will give you your hedgehog back. I won't, because I'll give you him back. But that's what we call a ransom. Someone has to pay to free someone else, or to get them out of slavery, or to get them away from someone else. So Jesus says he gives up his life as a ransom to set someone or many people free. Does that help us with what's going on? Does that answer our clues? Because we learned, didn't we, that there was darkness, which showed that God was angry with someone. We worked out that the person who God was angry with was Jesus, because he'd been left all alone, separated from God because of his anger. Then we realised there were people who were confused about being rescued. But then we found out that Jesus gives up his life as a ransom. Who's got our last piece of the jigsaw? Ah, Jacob, you've got it. Well done, you thought about that. Oh, there's a scout. Well prepared. Worked out how to stick that on the bottom. Jesus is the ransom. He's the one who pays. He didn't have any sin of his own. Sin is what makes God angry. He had no sin of his own. But he pays the ransom to rescue those who have sinned. It's amazing, isn't it? Jesus gives up his life to pay the ransom for people who need rescuing from God's anger at sin. He has no sin of his own, but he gives his life as a ransom. That's what was happening as he died on the cross. Jesus says, I will give my life to rescue those people who need rescuing from their sin that separates them from God. I will pay the ransom. So, we've made sense of some of the mystery. Jesus has been abandoned by God, but that's because he's taking on the sin of the world and he's giving his life as a ransom to rescue those who God is angry at. Great. But then we need to ask this question. Did it work? That's what Jesus said he was doing. That's what the Bible leads us to believe. But did it work? That's the important question we need to know, isn't it? Did it work? And will it work for us? You see, some things promise a lot. They promise to work, don't they? Here's some green coffee extract tablets that say they will slim you down and burn your fat. Here are some fancy trainers called Shape Ups. And if you walk in them, you'll shape up. Okay? You will lose all the weight you need to lose and you'll become amazingly toned. Big promises. These were both found by the Advertising Standards Agency to have overpromised. But what about the cross? Has the cross overpromised? Did the ransom work? Well, let's see what Matthew tells us. What does Matthew tell us? Because we've got a little bit more to read, haven't we? We've got a little bit more of our reading to look at. But Jesus giving up his life as a ransom for many, well, let me tell you, it works immediately. We see the effects very quickly. Someone read, have a look again at verse 51 of our reading and tell me when the temple curtain was torn. At that moment, straight away, isn't it? You couldn't get more instant than that. It says, at that moment, at the very moment Jesus gives up his life, things begin to happen. Now, the temple curtain was a big curtain, not like the curtains you have in your house. Huge big curtain. And that curtain basically said, it was a reminder that sin separated people from God. Remember, we learned, didn't we? When God is angry, he leaves people alone. He separates himself from them. And this big curtain in the temple said that. It said, you're separated from God because of your sin. You can't come in. But the minute Jesus gave up his life as a ransom, what happened? Got torn from where to where? Top to bottom. Who wants to come and tear my curtain? Brilliant. That's it. Keep going. Yeah, that'll do. Great job. Yes, there you go. Like, give me the two biggest bits. Two biggest bits, thank you. Yeah, the temple curtain, the minute Jesus died, gave up his life, the temple curtain ripped in two. You can just keep that. And when the temple curtain ripped in two, what it was really saying was, you're welcome. You're welcome in. Whoever you are, Jesus' death has been effective already. And you are welcome to come in. So instantly, at the same moment as Jesus gave up his life, we begin to see it's working, isn't it? It's for real. People are welcome. The barrier separating them from God, God saying, go away from me, has been taken away. The temple curtain. We need never be separated from God again. But something else happens. The earth shook and the rocks split. This is earth-shattering, groundbreaking news, isn't it? It's the start of something new. Because of Jesus' death, life and death for humans will never ever be the same again. For anyone who believes in Jesus, this is the start of something new. Earth-shattering, groundbreaking, tombs opening, death has been defeated. Matthew's really giving us a sneak preview of what's going to happen on resurrection morning. But that's what he's saying. This is earth-shattering news. We don't need to fear death anymore. We don't need to be afraid of death separating us forever from God. And then there's someone else there, isn't there, who's watching, the centurion and the others, we're told. Now, the centurion literally had blood on his hands. He'd been involved in Jesus' suffering and death. And yet, what does he say when Jesus dies? What does this man, who was guilty of being involved in Jesus' death, what does he understand? Well, he understands his eyes are opened, and even this guilty man can understand who Jesus is. And you know what? This guilty man was almost the first person through the torn curtain. He sees what happens and he confesses Jesus for who he is. Wow! Does Jesus' death work? Yes, it does. Very much so. Jesus' death works. And it's effective from the minute he gives up his life. Now, I don't know where you stand today. You might have heard many Good Friday talks. You might have read this passage many times. And maybe you do know that Jesus died for you. You know that his ransom was paid for you. Have you thanked God that Jesus was separated from God so that you don't have to be? This separation that Jesus faced when he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? You know, if we trust in Jesus, we will never face that. We will never have to face that agony. And have you realised how painful that was for Jesus, who was so close to his Father, who spoke to him every day? How painful it was for him to be separated, even for just 3 hours. He was separated from the Father he always loved and always obeyed. And he did that for me and for you. And that's how deeply he loves us. Or maybe you're still wondering about this. Maybe you're like the people who were standing at the cross. And you think, well, I think there is something in this. You know, rescue and all that. But who is Jesus? I mean, this Easter stuff, Christians take it really seriously. And you know, they say it's life-changing and earth-shattering news. And I still haven't quite got my head around that. Well, why not take the opportunity this Easter time maybe to pick up our book? Is Easter unbelievable? Maybe it all sounds too good to be true. Or maybe take a Bible. We'd love you to take a Bible and go home and read the account of Jesus' death. And don't spend this Easter being confused. Or maybe you're a bit like the centurion. Do you know that you're guilty? Maybe you feel like him, guilty. Maybe you feel you have blood on your hands because of how you've lived, things you've done, the way you've ignored God. Maybe you think you're unforgivable. I'm sure that's what the centurion felt when he was there hammering Jesus onto the cross. But you know, Jesus has paid your ransom. That curtain has ripped wide open. And any who turn and recognise Jesus and call out to him and recognise him as God's Son, anyone is welcomed in. And that includes you.